Welcome to this episode of Unleashing Your Leadership. I'm Guy Rogers, President and CEO of Pinnacle Forum, where God's mission for us is transforming leaders to transform culture. Our objective in this podcast is to reach beyond the question, what is good leadership? To answer the question, how is our unique calling to lead unleashed? From recognized experts in the field of leadership to Pinnacle Forum partners who are living it, our goal is to help you recognize and apply biblical and life principles that will help you in your journey to walk in the fullness of Christ-centered leadership that transforms culture. Before I introduce today's guest, here's what Dr. Henry Cloud in his must-read book, The Power of the Other, wrote about relationships. Science confirms that getting to the next level is 100% dependent on relationship, but the relationship must be the right kind of relationship, more than just hanging out with pals. This speaks right to the heart of our value proposition at Pinnacle Forum, the unleashing of leadership at the next level, and the level after that, and the one after that, through the cultivation of the right kind of relationships in a confidential, safe space with other Christian leaders who are peers. This is who we are and what we do in our forums. If you'd like to find out more, I invite you to email me personally at guy.rogers, R-O-D-G-E-R-S, at pinnacleforum.com, or you can call me at 480-609-7000. Because no matter how much we study about leadership, without the right kind of relationships, we will hit ceilings we cannot break through. My guest today is Kevin Wayne Johnson. Kevin is the founder, chief visionary, and CEO of the Johnson Leadership Group, LLC, and an independent certified coach, teacher, and speaker with the nationally recognized John Maxwell team. Kevin provides organizations and the people who work with within them with the tools to forge effective personal and interpersonal communication. He delivers training on the elements of dynamic relationships to equip teams with the attitudes and attributes needed to develop individuals into leaders. He enjoyed a 34-year career, retired now, in government and private industry as a middle to senior level leader. He has managed and led workforce development, executive training, organizational change, acquisition and procurement, customer service, client relationships, security, records management, property administration, facilities and human resources, and served as chief of staff, Department of Defense at Fort Meade, Maryland, in his final position before retirement. And that's a lot. I think you touched about every aspect of what you would do in management and leadership in either government or business. So, welcome, Kevin, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. They did keep me busy, but it was a good busy. So
I'll bet they did. I'll bet they did. So I'm intrigued by your story, you know, moving from where you were to where you are. So let's break this down into two parts as we start, okay?
Okay.
Tell me first what your experience was like in the government. Yeah, you know, that world for 34 years, and how you as a Christian worked within it. Let's start there, and then we'll shift to getting to where we are, where you are in the present.
Okay, well, I lived by the biblical principle that Jesus taught us in his very first public sermon. So when you read through chapter 5, 6, and 7 in the book of Matthew, you'll become very familiar with what Jesus referred to as the golden rule. So that's something that believers and unbelievers can relate to. They all know it. They all know what it means to treat others the way that you want to be treated. And that's the model that I live. So if I wasn't being treated right by my boss or my peers or even a direct report, I would continue to be who Kevin Johnson is from the heart. And over time, people just kind of resonated with that. They understood it. They accepted it. And that's what got me through all of the leadership responsibilities that I had at the mid-level leader, and as a senior level leader throughout my entire time. It wasn't always a smooth road, just like in life. We have our valleys and
we have
mountaintops experiences, but we continue to stay firm in what we believe and how we believe it. And being connected with our Lord and Savior was always that saving grace that kept me moving forward. So whether they were staff or my peers and colleagues that I had to rely upon, or even my boss, whose my responsibility is to make my boss look good. At all times, being that person right there in the middle of that circle, I would always stay true to making sure that I would treat people the way that I would want to be treated. Not a very, very hard concept, but
really?
And that environment, it can be hard to do, but through scripture, through staying true to who you are, I was able to get it done. And so fortunately, it was a real blessing to finish out my career as a chief of staff with that awesome responsibility. I often refer to my last position also as the chief of stuff. People always come to the chief of staff assuming that we have the answer. And of when course. We don't, we know how to find the answer. And so actually, I had been told, Guy, by a number of my champions and sponsors in my career, I had been asked and told and advised to serve as a chief of staff because they thought that I had what it took much earlier in my career.
Okay.
But I chose other avenues. But at the very end, when I knew the end was coming, I accepted that role. And I'm glad that I did.
So this may be a hard question to answer, but I'm going to pose it anyway and see if you can. What would you say was the most difficult challenge you had to deal with in that 34-year career? Can you find one kind of, you know, as an umbrella, if you will, difficulty of trying to be a Christian, live as a leader in that environment?
Yeah, it's easy. I take people back to 1996. So back in 1996, I was promoted into my very first managerial position, and it happened to be a mid-level position. I left headquarters, Washington, D.C., and relocated to become the regional chief procurement officer at the Department of Treasury in Midtown Manhattan.
Okay.
I left an environment where employees were non-unionized to the northeast portion of our country where the union is very, very strong.
Okay.
And unfortunately, because of the past experiences between the union and management, there was a lot of dissension, a lot of division, and a lot of fighting.
And suspicion? Would there be suspicion?
It was just assumed that with this new young manager coming on board from headquarters, that because I'm in management, I'm the enemy.
Okay.
And people didn't know me. My staff didn't know me. The union folks didn't know me. It took time to get to know who Kevin Johnson is, but nevertheless, they treated me as an enemy. So I had to walk through that, and I had to be true to my faith and stick with what I believe. I had to convince my staff that I'm not here to harm, hurt. I'm here to help. I want you to succeed in your career, and I'm going to be your advocate and your support. And I had to demonstrate that not just through words, but through actions. Unfortunately, I had a couple of people on the staff that liked to stir up trouble.
Oh, boy.
And they would purposefully give a phone call. This was really prior to email being as popular as it is now.
Sure.
They would call the local union steward to just make up stuff on this new. Let's get this young guy, right? Let's make up some stuff. So union steward, he's not treating us right. He didn't say good morning to me today.
He's showing
favoritism to her or to him, and that's not right. I need you to come. We need to have a meeting. And so I had a New Yorker who was first assigned as the union steward, a relatively divisive, mean-spirited type of guy looking to stir up trouble, assuming that what they said was true without asking me my views.
Right.
It took about maybe 6 months after I met with the local union president and some other people there on the floor. I was finally able to convince the team to remove him because he was really poisonous. He really wasn't helping. He was just stirring things up.
Sure.
And we were finally able to remove him, and a new union steward came on board who understood the plight of this young manager coming on board. He was able to see that I was genuine, that I was honest, and that I meant well by the employees, something totally different than what they were used to. And he actually became an advocate as best as he could. And he was able to help work with me and the union president and the other union stewards and my staff. And not only were we able to turn the staff around, but we sweetened the relationship, and we were able to really get some things done. And it was during a time where the government agency had just gone through a massive reorganization. So we went down from 7 regions to 4, which means now we have a greater scope of responsibility. And the reputation of the staff that I inherited really wasn't that good. So my job was to build them up, My job was to restore the relationships with the district directors and the regional commissioner, and to make that happen. And on top of all of that, Guy, we were in the midst of implementing a brand new financial system across the entire nation. So it was a very, very challenging position. But because I chose to treat people the way that I would want to be treated, over time, people saw that and they resonated with it. And they embraced it. Mm. And that was the difference maker. And I was in that job for 3 years. When I moved on, I recommended that my deputy step up and become the head of the organization. They accepted my recommendation, and then I moved on to the next position. But that's the one that I highlight, Guy, because that was my very first management position after just graduating from the Executive Potential Program. And my folks in my organization had the trust in me that I would be the right person to do that. And then they promoted me to this position in New York, a very challenging environment, a very challenging job, a very challenging culture. But I do believe that with prayer and with action and with faith, we can turn things around. And that's the example that I always use when people ask me that question.
It's as simple as it is profound, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We all have situations where we're in, you know, environments where there's poison and things. We've all experienced it, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating. So it's easy to get caught up in that. And what you're saying is, if you'll just step back day by day, and just remind yourself, treat them the way you would want to be treated, live it out this way, that's going to make an enormous difference. If nothing else, that's what you're saying.
Yep, that's the bottom line. And of course, we people, we get in our own way and we make things much more complicated than we should. But that's just the reality of the human element. And as a leader, that's something that we have to recognize and acknowledge. You know, the people that we lead, men, women, boys, girls, young, old, doesn't matter. People are people. These human elements will always come out, different personalities. And as the leader, we have to help them through these times. It was a relatively rough time for the entire agency again, sure, because there was a nationwide reorganization. There was a nationwide implementation of a new financial system. And the scope of responsibilities for the four regions are now much larger than they would have been had we remained.
Right.
So it was like a perfect storm.
It was like a perfect storm.
It depends on how you look at it. You know, what's your outlook on life? Bring the challenges. I accept it. It makes me grow and be that much better.
For sure. Okay. So then fast forward, God has taken you into a different place, a different role. Mm-hmm. Briefly, because I want to dig into some questions briefly, how did that happen?
Well, I've been on a dual track, Guy, for a good little while. My wife and I, her name is Gail, we came to a saving knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on the 2nd of May, 1993. Now, okay. I had already been raised in the church from the time I was a little boy. And I had a reverence for God, and I understood the importance of church. As a matter of fact, I remember being water baptized as a child, but I don't remember the minister explaining to me what water baptism means.
Okay.
As a child, I do not remember accepting Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And so as adults, when my wife and I went through the process the second time on the 2nd of May, 1993, I better understood what salvation was. And then we also chose to be water baptized again, because this time when the minister explained it, I understood. At the same time, I was being promoted on my job, mm-hmm, my vocational job.
Right,
so
right.
I've been bivocational for the past 20 years.
Okay.
It didn't take very long at all after my salvation experience to recognize and acknowledge that God had something much bigger for me.
Okay.
So I began writing. I wrote a book series, Give God the Glory. There's 8 books there. I was writing articles relating to my vocation, which was acquisition and contracting. Those articles were all being published in national magazines.
Okay.
High-ranking officials in the government were reading my articles and calling me to be a speaker, to testify before Congress on some very key legislation. I mean, all of these things were happening simultaneously. And during that time where I was being promoted on the job and things were going well, I was also being ordained into the Christian ministry as a deacon.
Okay. Okay.
And then I became a teacher. And then ultimately I became an adjunct professor at two or three different Bible schools. And then I became the president of a Bible school. And
okay.
Before I know it, I was being elevated to associate pastor and then senior pastor.
There you go.
All at the same time, doing well on my job as well, because I was able to balance both work and life.
Okay. Okay.
At the same time. Never being afraid to communicate my faith in the workplace. And so, you know, long story short, over the past 20 years, it's kind of been my journey.
Okay.
And helping people along the way is how I really got into this space of leadership development training.
Okay.
And coaching. That's how it
makes
happens.
Sense. Makes, yeah. Makes perfect sense. Yeah. So when you and I talked recently on our, for you, our listeners, I like to do a pre-interview call with my guests because it helps us to focus and kind of, you know, flesh out some things for
right.
the call. And so I asked you the question, what would be the two or three top things you think we'd want to focus in on with respect to how our listeners can see their leadership calling, you know, better unleashed? And you started out without hesitation. You said, leaders are learners. Leaders are learners. And then they're also leaders are readers. And so there's two parts here. So I want to first dive into the leaders are learners. You know, it may seem obvious to us that leaders would be learners, but how would you say it really ought to be happening in an intentional way so that we are constantly moving so that we can kind of go forward?
Well, you know, Guy, there's so many resources out here for so many different people, depending on what path they're on. But the reason that I immediately resonated with that when you asked the question is because you and I have to always be in a position where we are growing and developing and maturing and getting better.
Okay.
Paying close attention to what's going on in our country, in our nation, in our society, and in the world, so that we can continue to educate others because we're educated. We're aware of what's going on.
Okay.
And so having been a student of a frontline leadership development program, a mid-level leadership development program, and an executive potential program, a graduate of that, that was good for that time. But, you know, that was 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
So how have I grown and developed since then? Is the question. So as leaders, we have to remain sharp so that those that are within our sphere of influence, which includes our boss, our peers and colleagues, and our direct reports, we can also work to keep them sharp as well. You know, one of the key things that gives us credibility, Guy, is our acumen.
Mm.
Knowing what we're talking about. I mean, who's going to follow us if we don't know what we're talking about?
Good point.
We're going to get into the relationship a little bit later, but part of our credibility is being a subject matter expert. And so if I tell people to consider hiring me to train your, for example, your frontline workforce who are just entering into supervision, managerial responsibilities, and leadership, I have to be able to demonstrate to them that I have the intel and the acumen in that space so that when it's all said and done, not only do I meet their desired outcomes for their new leaders, but those new leaders walk away inspired and motivated and encouraged to do some really great work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to happen if I can't convince somebody that I first have the knowledge that I can share. And so that builds the credibility as we go forward. So we're learners. We have to be learners because there is so much information out here to learn and to know and to deposit into the current and next generation of leaders. So it just doesn't stop. It's an ongoing, recurring, nonstop thing that we have to be involved with. And it has to be intentional.
Right.
You know, no one's going to make you do it. It's something that you just have to,
yeah.
to do and have an encouragement to get done.
Yeah. Not like going to school. You're involved
right.
in leading and so on. And so you have to focus time, be disciplined about continuing this process of learning. So It reminds me of a quick anecdote, which actually segues really well to the next part of this, which is leaders are readers. As executive director in a previous organization, I had a staff that really read an age from a few millennials up to those who were, you know, more baby boomers like me. And I'll never forget one day, we had a Friday lunch every week, and it was just to talk and so on. You know, when one of my millennials asked the question, "Guy, it seems like no matter what topic comes up, what we're talking about, you seem to have some knowledge of that you can speak intelligently into that. How is that?" And I said to him, in not this exactly this way, but my message to him was simply this, and here's the segue: leaders are readers. I said, I read across all platforms. I'm interested in things. I may not be an expert, but I read enough to know enough. So that brings me to this next part of what we just talked about: leaders are readers. So how do you respond to this, to someone who says, "Gosh, there's plenty of great videos out there. There's apps, there's podcasts like this one. Why do I need to read? Why do I need to read? Why is that so important?"
I think it's very important. Number one, it expands our vocabulary, which is very, very important. Okay. We're learning new words. It gives us just different thoughts. It stimulates our intellectual capital. It gives us the ability to maybe see something a little bit different. You know, one thing that I teach my students quite a bit is, you know, part of the reason I'm here is because I want you, as it relates to solving problems and making decisions, I want you to kind of see the scenario through a different lens. And I also want to get you out of your little sandbox and your comfort zone and sort of look at something a little differently, look at it a slightly different way. And when we do that, what it does, it gives us the opportunity to just kind of expand our horizons in terms of how we look at things. And I think it's very, very important. You know, with our young people, when I talk to parents, I always encourage parents, Guy, to please get your child a passport before they get a driver's license.
Interesting.
Because I would like for them, as the next generation of leaders, I would like for them to be able to articulate and have an understanding of a different culture other than America. Because not only are we the richest nation, but we also have an abundance. So that means we're very wasteful. I mean, if you just go out to any given restaurant on any given evening, you'll see how much food gets thrown away because they give us too much. When you travel to other countries, you'll have a greater appreciation for who you are because you'll see other people that have lack. Mm-hmm. And so all of this, I believe, Guy, all of this is part of who we are as leaders. And as readers, we get a different perspective on what's going on around us. And it gives us the ability to look at different ways of solving problems and making decisions.
And for you, our listeners, I want to add something to that. There is actually scientific evidence that demonstrates that reading stimulates your brain in a different way than watching videos.
Right.
Reading is more engaging. It's more, so I'm Albert Moeller, who's the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, who I had at national conference a couple of years ago. He made a big point of this. Listeners, please, I encourage you. I know Kevin would agree with me. Be a reader. Mm-hmm. Be a reader. Because that will make you a better leader.
Yeah. And, you know, while we're reading, I don't know about many of us out there in the listening audience, but when Kevin Johnson reads, when something really, really stimulates me or really, really captures my attention, when I'm reading it, now I have the opportunity to highlight, underline, and circle.
Yep.
And go back and research it, right?
Yep.
Because otherwise we miss it. You know, real quick, Guy, let me just throw out a little tip. When it comes to communication, this is something else that we talk about a lot. The words that we actually say when we're having a conversation really only represent about 7% of how we go about communicating.
Right.
The other two pieces are the tone and the body language.
Right.
So we miss out on so much if you just hear and that's it. But when we read, we have an opportunity, again, underline, highlight, or circle, and I can go back and now I can remember what I read like literally a month ago, but I won't remember what you said a month ago.
Right.
So that has a lot to do with it as well. And these principles have to be taught. People don't automatically know this because you don't get it in school. That's another reason why we're leaders are learners, because you only get a fraction of what you need to know in school.
Of course.
The rest of it comes from our own initiative.
Of course. Well, I remember in my opening here, I quoted Henry Cloud's Power of the Other.
Yeah.
And there's an example. I have it underlined, and there's a few other places in the book, and I can literally tell somebody, because it was so significant. I can't do this in every book, but there are some that I can. On page 17, it's like, and it helps embed it, and you can use it. It's just, it just has a way of doing it in a way that, like listening to a sermon, for instance, you walk away, ask the average person after they've walked away from a sermon, ask them one day later, what was the sermon about?
Right.
And bad news, pastors, and I don't mean anything offense, but you'll find that there's a very, very small percentage of what's remembered. If they have one good takeaway, you accomplish something in that sermon. Because
yeah, that's why I always include sermon notes.
There you go. There you go. So let's shift gears here. So one of the things we talk a lot about in Pinnacle Forum is the stewardship of influence. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are familiar with the stewardship of time, talent, treasure, but we at the stewardship of leadership, I've got a little plaque on my desk that's a quote from Johnny Erickson Tata that says, we are responsible for the stewardship of our influence. Mm-hmm. And that's because we believe that influence is the key to transforming the world around us. Mm-hmm. It affects individuals and thus affects culture. So when you and I talked about this, you talked about the importance of effective listening to be an influencer. Unpack that for us, please.
Absolutely. So here's a little known fact, again, because we have to be taught. And if you're not taught, then you just don't know. We have two ears and one mouth for a reason, I believe. And effective listening skills communicates back to the person that we're talking to that we value and care what it is they're saying. Mm. Now, even if we don't necessarily agree that we can move out on it, that we can implement or execute on that particular idea or thought, the fact that we took the time to listen and hear them out makes that person or people feel valued, and that we really do care, and that they're significant and they're a part of the team, they're a part of the group. I've had many, many instances, Guy, where I've just opened up my heart and my ears to hear people out because they told me they had a great idea. Mm-hmm. And to them, it is a great idea.
Right.
In many instances, to me, it's a great idea. But guess what? It's not in alignment with our mission and vision for this particular phase,
right,
this particular season. But that does not mean that sometime in the future we can't come back and have another conversation about it. So instead of shutting them down to say, not a good idea, can't move on that right now, thank you, but no thank you, taking the time to hear them out, making sure that they feel like they're a valued part of the team, and then have a conversation around the fact that this is the reason why we can't move out on it right now. It's a great idea, but we can't really do anything with it right now. What we tend to do, and this is just the human element, what we tend to do is get in front of people's thoughts. Mm. And we think we already know what they're going to say before they get a chance to say it. And we either tune them out, we cut them off, or our body language gives a very, very loud signal that I'm really not interested in hearing. Mm-hmm. And we send people away feeling real, real small and real insignificant. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think it's deliberate or intentional. Listening, good listening, is something that has to be taught. And when we teach it, then people can resonate with, oh, so now I get it. And again, even if we disagree, we can still explain why we disagree and why we can't move on it right now. That's entertained at a later date. And then we can see how we can potentially add that into the project that we're currently working on. And so it's very, very key. It's very important. That's part of the communication piece that we teach. Above and beyond what we have to say, we have to be cognizant of the fact that how we go about listening to others is very, very key to moving anything forward, moving a relationship forward, moving a marriage forward, how we deal with our children, our extended family, our immediate family, our neighbors at the community meeting, at work, wherever we are, the better listeners we are, the better organizational dynamics we will have. And that includes the church as well.
Sure. So I want to highlight two points that you made there, and then that segues to a further unpacking of this. The first thing is that if we value someone, we'll listen to them. So we have to think about how we want it, how we treat other people. I think that's the beginning of good listening. But then we have to acquire listening skills. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come, you're right, it does not come naturally. Let's face it, as a child, what do we want to do?
Right.
We talk, you know, and so on. So let's break that down here. Yeah, right. So let's break that down. What would you say are some key skills related to the overall, you know, process of being a good listener that values people?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind, no doubt about it, is the fact that you and I are here on the earth to serve others, right? We're taking focus off of self, and we're here to serve others.
Okay.
If you have that servant's heart, and many leaders do and many leaders don't, again, it has to be taught. But if you have that servant's heart, you have what it takes inside of your core to hear people out, to listen to what they have to say. Because even if you don't necessarily value what it is they have to say, you're giving them the professional and personal courtesy to have the opportunity and the platform and the venue to say it.
Right.
And it makes people feel so much better than when we just cut them off or we give the indication through our body language that I'm really not interested. Mm-hmm. So just having that servant mentality is the first thing I think about when it comes to having much better listening skills. Because people that don't have a desire to serve others, and it's all about them, and it's about, you know, what I want to do because this is my great idea,
right.
That just turns people off. And before you know it, you're going to look up one day, you're going to look behind you, you're not going to have any followers.
Yeah,
if you don't have any followers,
and they're not going to leave. Yeah, right. And they're not going to listen well. Okay.
Exactly.
So that's the first one. So what will be the second one?
I would say, at least from Kevin Johnson's perspective, I've had some people disagree, but from Kevin Johnson's perspective, I believe leaders are also empathetic.
So, okay.
I have an empathy for people to be the best that they can be. As a matter of fact, oftentimes in many of the different ways that I travel, sometimes I want more for people than they even want for themselves.
Mm. Wow.
So I've had that situation as well. I really want you to succeed. I want you to be the best. I want you to be exhibit A. I want you to be outstanding. I want people to look at you and think of you as being someone that they could tap to say, yes, I want them on my team. And so I'm very empathetic as it relates to people's goals and dreams and aspirations. And that's where the coaching comes in. So I'm listening very intently to what's on their heart and what their potential is, because quite frankly, Guy, most people already have the answer on the inside, but it takes a good leader to get them to see that they already had the answer. That's another part of what we do. So being a servant, and that's core to who we are.
Right.
And then being empathetic as well.
Right.
You know, sometimes being more patient with a person than I should be, but ultimately it pays off because, let's just be honest, I can expect a 30-year-old person to have a certain level of maturity, but the fact of the matter is all 30-year-olds are not on the same level
when it comes
to their maturity. So someone may be wise way beyond their years, and another person might take until maybe age 42 to finally one day wake up and get it. So Kevin Johnson is going to be empathetic and patient even with that 42-year-old. Until they meet their goals, aspirations, and dreams.
Okay. So you actually mentioned a third one there, patience.
Yep.
Very important, patience.
Yep.
And then I heard you say a few other things. One of them was, and these are more practical things. You're talking, you know, attitudinal things there and values. Now, a couple of practical things you mentioned, cutting people off.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times, I think, in a conversation – there can be a cutting off or something because it's not meant to be not listening, but there's just something interject, and it's a natural form of conversation, and that's okay. I think what you're saying is kind of the constant You're always, you know, before they're done, you're thinking about what you're going to say and you're saying it and cutting off. Those are the kinds of things that communicate you're not listening, so you don't care about me.
Yeah, guy. I mean, the staff meeting scenario is the one I use the most. I've had an opportunity to chair hundreds of staff meetings, and I've had the opportunity to be a participant or an attendee at probably even more hundreds of staff meetings. And I'm watching and I'm observing the body language when I see people not have the opportunity to complete their sentence. Because two things are happening. You're sending a message that, number one, I'm cutting you off because I'm no longer interested in what you have to say, number one. But then the embarrassment of multitude of people that are in that room that witness it. So there's a double whammy that happens. And as leaders, we have to be cognizant of our surroundings. What's going on within our sphere of influence? Who's watching? Who's observing? Who's learning? Because oftentimes those that follow us emulate our behavior.
Of course.
So
we set the tone.
If I'm a lieutenant and I'm following a bad general, you know, by the time I move up the ranks and I become a general, I'm going to emulate that behavior that general taught me, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so our job, I believe, Kevin Johnson, is to help the current and next generation of leaders because they're dealing with more issues than I dealt with as a baby boomer. There is so much more information, which means that now they have to make more choices. And they were raised differently than I was. When I was raised, if you didn't come in first, second, or third place on the sporting field, you didn't get any awards.
Right.
And now we have a generation that's coming into the workplace and is already in the workplace and in the church, where when they were playing sports growing up, whether you were worst to first, everyone got a prize. And so they come into the workplace expecting to get a prize.
Yep.
Doesn't work that way.
Right.
that's none of our fault, but we inherit it and we have to deal with it. As leaders, we have to figure out how to deal with it.
Right.
Yep.
Something else I heard in what you were talking about was, and maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit here. We're getting to the point where we've got to wrap up, and maybe this is a good place to wrap up. Listening is also different in different contexts. You talked about a staff meeting. That's a particular context in where listening is practiced, and if it's practiced well, it produces X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. If I'm with a good friend, you know, and we're having a beer together or something, and we interrupt each other occasionally, we're laughing and so on, it doesn't have the same context. And so it sounds to me like we have to also, as leaders, be very cognizant of the context in which the communication is happening. Mm-hmm. And be intentional about that. Am I kind of reading between the lines there and hearing that?
No, you're spot on, guy. And the only thing I could really add to that also is recognizing the environment that we're in. So the conversation that you and I are having one-on-one may be different if we're in an environment where there's 35 others in the room with us. Now I have to really be aware of the fact that if I do something that's a negative influence, there's 34 other people in the room that are watching, most of which will never say anything, but they're watching. And there's a heightened chance of embarrassment of the person whose conversation I'm having in terms of how they're going to feel. Mm-hmm. And there comes a place and time where leaders, we just have to be aware of our surroundings and our environment, because we're influencing, you started out the show, we're influencing either positively or negatively. Mm-hmm. There's not much wiggle room in between. It's either positive or negative. And I try my best in all times, whether it's in the home or at the community meeting or at work or at church, wherever it might be, to be a positive influence. And it's very intentional. But guess what? I had to be taught. It doesn't come natural, and you don't get it in school.
Oh,
it has to be part. That's our individual initiative that we take to develop, grow, and mature.
For sure. Yeah. So to sum up, what we said today is leaders are learners.
Yes.
Leaders are readers.
Yes.
Leaders are listeners.
Absolutely.
You put that together, and every one of those things we do have to be taught. either Absolutely. Mentored by others or learned the hard way through trial and error or whatever. And that what that speaks to us, Kevin, you mentioned baby boomer, and I'm a baby boomer as well. When we look to the next generations of emerging leaders, what we can do with respect to helping them in ways maybe that we weren't helped, so that they can have their leadership accelerated and not and maybe a younger age because of that speaking into their lives. That's good.
Yep, that's good, guy. And as we do close, let me just share this with you as it relates to this leaders or learners, leaders or readers. So I usually give out a challenge. You know, you do anything repetitively for a certain number of time, it'll become a habit.
Right.
And so I always encourage everybody within my sphere of influence to read a book a month. If you do that, you'll read 12 books a month and you kind of see my little library.
12 books a year. I mean, you have 12 books a year, right?
Yeah. I have hundreds and hundreds of books on my library. I have a library downstairs. I have one behind me. And I share that with people that Kevin Johnson, when I travel across the country, not even international travel, but just domestic travel here in the U.S., generally speaking, if it's a 2-hour flight, I'll read a book on my 2-hour flight. Right? And I'm talking about just one way. It's not round trip, just one way. And so if Kevin Johnson can read a book going one way on a flight, then you can certainly read a book in a month. That's the challenge that I give.
It's remarkable you just said that, because I literally just recently interviewed another guest who said exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. So we'll bring that to a close. This is very good, Kevin. Thank you for your time. You have a website.
Yes.
Share that with us.
Yes. My website is the same as the name of my business, www.thejohnsonleadershipgroup.com. We are very pleased that the company is really growing since I retired about 2 years ago. We have corporate clients, church clients, federal government, and then I'm based in the state of Maryland. So the state of Maryland calls me as well. And we have grown tremendously in just these 2 years. So www.thejohnsonleadershipgroup.com. And let me know what we can do to help you.
.com. Yes. Good. Want to make sure we got that out. Kevin, thank you so much for your time, taking time out of your schedule to be with us. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
For you, our listeners, if you are a subscriber to this podcast, and if you listen regularly, you've heard me say this before, but I try to close every podcast with this. You can help us spread the word on Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever social media things. Maybe email a few friends with a link to a particular podcast and say, please listen to this. If you're not a subscriber, you can be through Google Play, iTunes, podcast apps such as Stitcher. You can go to our website, pinnacleforum.com, and you can find the subscriber link through there at the podcast app. We really encourage you. Spread the word. We got a lot of feedback about these podcasts. We're trying to be very practical about how we can live out our leadership. And lastly, if you are not a Pinnacle Forum partner, call me. Please, if you're interested in what we do, 480-609-7000, or you can email me at guy.rogers@pinnacleforum.com. I'd love to have a conversation with you about what we do in our forums to help you discover and live out to your fullest what your unique calling is to lead and transform the culture. Again, Kevin, thank you for your time today. It's been a real joy.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, wherever you go, whatever you do, whatever you touch, wherever you lead, remember to do all to the best of your ability to advance the kingdom of God. God bless you.